Welcome back behind the scenes of Karen's Couch once again. Now this week, of our three top shows that are absolutely your favorites, this week we're bringing you the number one, your number one most favorite show. So enjoy it. This one got the greatest ratings and your greatest clicks and your greatest comments. And it was a pleasure and a treat to bring this show to you. Welcome. Welcome to Karen's Couch. I'm so excited. I can hardly breathe. Now, I have to tell you, I've got somebody on the couch with me today that we're Skyping in all the way from the States. Now, I've been following this woman for at least, I don't know, maybe 10 years or more. I discovered her when I was on bended knees with tears in my eyes and a broken heart with nowhere to go. This woman was somebody who came into my life in the form of a book. And then it was followed up by some audio that I listened to, and then I watched some DVDs, and then I watched some YouTube when that was then the way that you watch stuff. And then I followed her through her journey with Oprah. And I am so, so excited to introduce you guys today to the amazing, breathtaking, awe-inspiring Byron Katie. And she's affectionately known as Katie, so I'm going to call her Katie. But I really want to tell you guys a little bit about who she is, and then I'm going to open it up to Katie to tell you everything else herself, because her story is just extraordinary. But you know, Byron Katie is not actually that different to all of us. Her story starts, really, her journey starts where she was a broken woman, completely ravaged by depression. And what happened with her was she would oscillate between phases of depression and incredible rage. After her second marriage, or during her second marriage, she asked her husband to finally take her to a halfway house because she couldn't live in a sight of her own skin anymore. And I don't know if you've ever felt like that, but I certainly did. And when I read that part of Byron's story, I totally related, and I thought, this woman knows me. It's almost like she's inside my mind. And her story goes further than that, though. When she was in the halfway house, nobody wanted to share a room with her because she had these incredible outbursts of rage. So she was there on her own. But what had developed over the years of such intense sense of self-hatred, self-loathing, and such low self-esteem that she didn't feel like she deserved to even sleep on a bed. So she slept on the floor. And she slept on the floor, I guess, as a source of punishment for herself. But then one morning, she woke up. And I use the term literally because I think that's really what today's show is going to really highlight. And we're going to take as long as it takes to talk to Byron, get her to answer all of our questions. And I'm actually really excited because we've got a live studio audience. So everybody, clap and yell as loud as you can. We are so lucky and so privileged and so honoured to have Byron Katie joining us. So please help me welcome Byron Katie to Karen's Couch as we explore what waking up really is. Yeah. Welcome. Welcome, Byron Katie. Thank you so much for joining me here on the couch. Is it okay with you if I call you Katie?
Absolutely.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Katie, you've been somebody that I've been following for, gosh, I've absolutely lost count. You know, I had a journey of my own where my partner committed suicide, and I was also in the 2002 Bali bombing. But what it did was it brought me to my knees, and I really resonated with where you started your real transformation, or you really started the beginning of where you are now. And when I found you, I felt like I'd found home. I felt like I'd found a woman who had been where I was and understood where I was. But the most magical thing about you and the work that you do is that, as you were saying even just a second ago off air, is that it's, you know, I must have spoken to countless counselors. And I know so many people who are suffering, who go to countless counselors and psychologists and psychiatrists and drugs and rehabs, and But none of it actually is the how, because at the end of the day, what I've realized, the journey is a solitary journey. Nobody can save us, and we can't save ourselves unless we know how. And I'm so grateful that you do the work that you do, because I honestly, and I mean this hand on heart, you are a key component to how I managed to heal myself in such a short space of time. You know, my journey of healing was about 6 years, maybe 7 years, and then a little bit of, you know, drag on beyond that. But it could have been 60 years, or it could have been never. And I think that today I really want to explore who Byron Katie is, how you got to where you are, and then I really want to talk about the work so that everybody knows the work and where they can find you. So who are you? Who are you? Other than the most gorgeous angelic creature, who are you?
Oh, you know, I am, the first thing that comes to mind is I am your pure imagination. And I love how you see me, and I love how that supports you. And what I really resonated with, Karen, was the how, you know, the work is how. And where I began was from that place of isolation and depression that you spoke to earlier. And you know, honey, I can't see you any longer on the screen. So I have no idea if...
It's okay. Keep going, Katie.
Okay.
You're still very live here.
Okay. So one morning, sleeping on the floor, as you described earlier, as I lay sleeping on the floor, actually a cockroach, that's how it was, the cockroach crawled over my foot, and I opened my eyes, and I opened in, you know, it's like I woke up in two ways. Once, like I did every single morning, only I had no awareness of that. The second way I was awake is that as I opened my eyes, all the darkness was gone. That depression that left me so suicidal and so completely unempowered. And, you know, when the Buddhists say life is suffering, I really understand that. So I opened my eyes, and in place of all that darkness is a joy that I can't describe. It was that space of non-identification that I can speak to after the fact. And I really can't do it justice speaking to it. But here's the thing, you know, good for me. Here's the thing that matters, okay? I noticed that when I believed my thoughts, I suffered. And when I didn't believe them, I didn't suffer. And I've come to see that this is true for every human being, and anyone can do this work. It's simple inquiry. Anyone can do it if their mind is open to it. And it was so freeing for me. It's like it deletes, it meets everything the mind spins. It's kind of met with this silent, is it true? Is it true? And then that ability to be aware of what's there in the space of that question. And so it's a walking freedom. And people in inquiry all over the world are finding this. And the way you expressed it, Karen, was it's like music to my heart, literally. If you have come so far and I have come so far, anyone can do it. And if the work were not simple, I never could have found it. And everyone, you know, each of us, no one is wiser than another. We hold equal wisdom. You know, we can see IQs are different, education are different, et cetera, et cetera. But wisdom, we have that in common, and it's across the board. And so these questions take us into that wisdom. And as we listen to what meets the questions, we're enlightened, lighter, more aware and living out of a wisdom that is real and not something we believe. It's an experience. And it really matters, you know, as a mother and a grandmother and a wife and a friend, it matters. Every time we do the work, we come out as kinder human beings.
So I'm keen to explore with you the work and the four questions and how you found them. But I guess I'm just going to indulge myself just a second, mm-hmm. because you are so articulate about when you say when we go into the inner inquiry and we meet the space that's left after yes. we ask the question. You know, one thing I read in an article that you wrote where you said that it woke you up or you woke up with it. And I understand that what you're referring to is that pure awareness and that pure consciousness. But I think
it's more as it.
As
you
it.
You know, after the experience, maybe my husband or children would say, where are you going? And to speak without identification, I mean, I was just so aware. My response would be, it thinks it wants a drink of water now. Or it thinks it's walking outside now. But to say I was, there was such a rub, it was so false. But I could say it thinks it wants a drink of water. It was nothing I figured out. It was just living in integrity. It was what was left. But I wasn't even sure I wanted a drink of water. No one is. Until you're drinking it, how can you be? You're guessing. It's a future. So just living out of that kind of inquiry and process being answered. And it sounds a little weird, but Karen, you go full measure, so I can only meet your questions with the most authentic response that I could give. And if it's difficult for some of you to understand my responses, then I apologize for that. Or do I? Oh, you know? You know, anyone that can't understand this, it's just so simple that you don't need it. And, you know, everything is working on time, everything on time.
It's amazing, actually, Katie. I've been reading lots of different information of late, and it's all, you know, it's all stepping stones. When you talk about it and you talk about that it wanted a drink, and how would you know? Because, you know, you're predicting something in the future.
It wanted a drink, it thought. That doesn't make the thought valid.
And it also doesn't make the thought you. And this is this is the part that I think I'm really fascinated with at the moment. I started asking a question of myself of when I talk to myself, who's listening? And when I ask that question of myself, it kind of takes me into a place of absolute silence inside where I realize that silence and that awareness, well, I'm listening. No, I'm doing the talking. Now there's just silence, you know, there's just nothing happening. And that same silence is a silence that is there when I wake up in the morning before I go into this frenzy of thought and then have a party with the thought and then make the thought who I am. But when I realize that I'm not what I think and I'm not what I believe, I'm free. And I think that's the most powerful sense. But I guess the question around that, though, is that we live in a world where people believe what they believe and we project our beliefs out onto others and out onto the world outside. So does that then mean that the whole world that we see is just an illusion?
Well, if you point all that back to yourself and let's watch my attempt, it's like, the world believes what it believes I think. So it always takes me back to myself. You know, I don't know what the world thinks. The world only exists because I am considering a world right now. It's all in my head. So it's a one-man show.
Stop it. Wow. That's the most profound answer. Because the world only exists based on what I believe it to be.
The end.
Our work here is done. So, Katie, what about...
There's no exception to that, too.
Right. Because I was just, so what about... But what about? And then what about? So there's no exception to that. So talk to us then about the four questions that helps people to actually get to the same understanding of freedom.
Well, let's say, for example, I had the thought that let's say he doesn't care about me. Let's say I walk into a room and I look at his face and I just know from that face, that look on his face, that he doesn't care about me. And so the first question, there are four, the first question is, he doesn't care about me. Is it true? So I invite all of you in the audience to find a moment in time where you met someone and you had that thought, or you were with, maybe it was your own child, maybe a sibling, but any time that comes to you when you've had the thought, he doesn't care about me, or maybe it's a she and I'll use he. So is it true? And the second question, can you absolutely know that it's true, he doesn't care about you? So continue to just be in that moment with that person as you consider these questions. Now, the third question, notice, how do you react in the moment you believe that thought, he doesn't care about you? Notice the emotions that happen immediately. He doesn't care about me. Some of us, depending on the situation, he doesn't care about me, we begin to raise our voices, or we begin to accuse.
Because we go into defense mode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And defense is the first act of war. So anytime I'm defensive, I have started a war.
True.
They haven't, I have. He's standing there with a look on his face.
Innocent.
What I'm thinking and believing about him is the cause of my defense, my low self-esteem, how do I react when I think the thought? I'm not pretty enough. I'm too fat. I'm not smart enough. He holds a grudge. He is unfair. Who does he think he is? And all the emotions that go with that. And he's just standing there with a look on his face. So who would I be in that moment? Who would you be in that moment in that same situation, looking at him, that look on his face, without the thought, he doesn't care about me?
Well, I dare say the answer to that most likely would be free, if you didn't have to carry the weight of all of that around.
And I'm feeling a kind of compassion as well, and a connectedness that wasn't there when I was believing the thought. I'm believing the thought. I'm separate. Everything from hurt to hostile.
So you kind of let yourself off the hook as well as letting the other person off the hook. And then you can actually see them.
I'm witnessing. And those questions are allowing me to see that situation in a way that I completely missed. And out of a sense of heart, out of a sense of heart. And it takes me from love, connectedness, to compassion but it's the extreme opposite, and the emotions follow that.
Mm.
There are terms for it, like right-mindedness.
Mm.
You know, it doesn't mean that he does like me. I don't know, but I have I'm in that don't know position. And so far, there's no way for me not to like him. He has said nothing. For all I know, that's how he looks when he's happy. I mean, I just, what I'm believing about him is the cause of my suffering. And it's the cause of all violence in the world, all war. So now we turn it around. We've done the four questions, and the four questions you can always find free at thework.com. And so we turn it around, four questions and turn around. So he doesn't care about me, turned around. I don't care about him. Well, in that moment, is it I don't care about him? Well, I'm projecting things about him that I have no idea are true or not.
Oh, wow.
I haven't given him even a chance to. I haven't told him what I'm thinking. I haven't shared it with him. I've given him no room to be anyone other than an enemy. I don't care about him at all. I'm busy holding my identity. My identity in the moment is I know. That I know mind, that ego. So another turnaround. He doesn't care about me. He does care about me. Okay, so now, you know, the work is meditation. So we would close our eyes and consider he does care about me. Consider that in your situation. Okay, example, he does care about me. He has not told me, I don't care about you. He hasn't given me any indication other than a look on his face. And I saw the look on my face when I saw how I react when I believe the thought. It was hostile. Or it was hurt.
Yeah.
Or it took on, I'm better than you, look on his face. That's superior. If you don't like me, well, who, you know, who are you?
And then it just goes from
you know, there. It's just so clear. It's so clear that what I'm thinking and believing about him is the cause of my suffering, not him.
Yeah, yes.
So those are the turnarounds and examples. Just a simple, just one concept walked through like that on a Judge Your Neighbor worksheet. That's also our, you just go to the website and just hit print and it'll come right up for you. No newsletter to sign up for, nothing. It just comes to you directly.
And for everybody, and that's thework.com. All the W's dot thework.com.
And then I'm also there walking people through that Judge Your Neighbor worksheet in the same way.
Yeah.
And so the work is simple. Judge your neighbor, write it down, ask for questions, turn it around, and set yourself free or not.
And there's also a phone app that I've actually got on my iPhone. It's the Byron Katie's work. And it's fantastic. Whenever I get stuck in a moment, it's just a reminder for me of, hang on, who am I and what am I doing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And there's a one belief at a time where if you're shopping and someone cuts in front of you, you know, while you're waiting, you can do they're rude.
Yeah.
Or it's not fair. You can, it'll take you through those those one-liners. Or there's an app for the entire Judge Your Neighbor worksheet, which is really powerful as well.
That's fantastic. So, Katie, what about, so, you know, that's if we've got somebody that's in our lives that we feel, you know, we've been judging incorrectly. Mm-hmm. What about when it's ourselves? What about when we have self-hatred or we have self-loathing, either because we've made decisions that have brought us to a place in our lives that we don't like, or the way we look? Or
I would print out a Judge Your Neighbor worksheet. And if that's what I was experiencing, I would say, I'm upset with myself because I hate me. Or I am confused because I hate me. Whatever the emotion is, feel it, identify it.
Can we work through that one with you? Because I've got a couple of
sure.
questions that have come through from our audience that are related to that. So can we work through the questions on that?
Sure. So have you ever had that thought? I hate myself.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so find a situation when you were thinking that. And I invite all of you, if you've ever been depressed, and you've had that thought, you know, identify that moment. Maybe you were in bed and too depressed to get up. I spent a lot of years that way.
Yeah.
Maybe you flunked a test and you're thinking, I hate myself. Mm. And so imagine yourself. Let's say I flunked a test. The situation is, I look back and what comes to me is I'm in a classroom. I'm a junior in high school. I flunked the test. My teacher brings it to me. He just slaps it on the table. To my mind, so everyone would look at my score. And in big red, there's a big red F for fail.
Yeah.
And so in that moment, I hate myself. So it could be that man that had the look on his face and I judged he doesn't like me. I hate myself. So everyone finds their own situation, so we can meditate on that specific situation.
Yeah.
So if you have one, let's do that now. So what is your situation, Karen?
Okay, so one of the questions that we have is that there's quite a few of them. I'm just trying to pick one of the ones that are probably going to be give you the most specific. We've got one of our audience, Fran. She has resentment for herself because of the decisions that she's made in her life, and it's brought her to a place where she's not loving it. And she's feeling resentment for herself because of the decisions that she's made.
So you know, I would question. I made the wrong decision.
Oh, good. Okay. Cool.
I just wouldn't hesitate. I made the wrong decision. And of course, those Judge Your Neighbor worksheets. I made the wrong decision. There's a whole. I call it the underworld. There's an underworld that's holding that up. Even after you question it. So a Judge Your Neighbor worksheet collects that underworld. So you do an entire worksheet. But if you're in a hurry, you just do, what was the one-liner again?
So I made the wrong decisions. I made the wrong decisions and I resent myself for where I am.
Okay, so one at a time. So I always do one at a time. I made the wrong decision. So you made the wrong decision. Is it true?
Well, I'm going to pretend that I'm Fran.
Okay.
And I just got the nod from the audience, so that's okay. So
you could pretend you're you and find a place where you've had that thought.
Okay.
But stay with what you are, with where you are. It's either way is good with me.
Do I know? Is that true? I made the wrong decisions. Well, at the time, you know, I did the best I could, but on reflection, they were wrong.
Okay, so the answer would be yes, it's true. Now, when you're doing the work, the first two questions, is it true? Can you absolutely know that it's true? Those two questions require the answer to both of them are one syllable, either a yes or no. So we meditate on the question until it's a yes or a no. And it's not a trick question where it's supposed to be no. It really, becometh this authentically. It's inner work. It's yours. It belongs to everyone. So you made a wrong decision. Is it true?
No.
You made a wrong decision. In that situation, in that moment, notice how you reacted when you believed that thought. And good to start with your emotions and then notice what happened out of that. How do you react when you think the thought I made the wrong decision?
Angry, hurt, sad, completely disconnected. and just heavy.
And in that same situation, who would you be without the thought, I made the wrong decision? So audience, either way, you made the decision. It's reality. It's just in that moment, notice, who would you be without the thought, I made the wrong decision?
Well, Katie, it feels like if I'm putting myself through that situation, it feels like my stomach just untied. Like I just felt like...
Now look at you again in that situation when you were believing the thought, with the thought.
No, now it's not it again.
Now without the thought.
It's just...
So same decision. Which one, you made it in peace, and the other in chaos.
Yeah.
I made the wrong decision. What is the opposite of wrong?
Right.
Okay, so turn it around. I made the wrong decision.
I made the right decision.
Okay. So when you look at that decision, where was it right for you?
Well, it was right for me at the time. At the time, with what I had available to me and what I knew, I know better now, but at the time, I knew what I knew, so I made the best decision that I was capable of making based on the information I had.
What was the decision? Can you share that?
Let me check. Can we share the decision? You want to yell that out? Yeah. So, Katie, Frange is saying she made the decision to travel for as long as she did. Was there a motivation behind that decision? No? So just to travel?
Well, really, I made the right decision. So I would begin to give myself examples of all the beautiful things that did happen as I was traveling. The people I met, the places I saw, the educational value, meaning what I learned. And I would find the valuable ones. And that would show me, you know, that in some ways I made the right decision. Without that decision, I would not have had those experiences. Where I went with it is I was married to a man. We had three children. And I believed for years I made the wrong decision. And when I did the work on it and I turned it around, I made the right decision. Without him, I wouldn't have the daughter I have, the two sons I have. I wouldn't have these grandchildren the way they are. Yeah. I wouldn't have the opportunity to be a better wife today. It grew me. And it was hard, you know, when I look at what I was thinking and believing, but it grew me. It was so painful that I had to shift into a whole other reality. And I'm so grateful to this man. Whereas I could not even think of him without being upset. I cannot think of him today. It's impossible to think of him today without being grateful. Mm. And I mean, really grateful. The sound of his voice. And I mean, he hasn't changed. And I just see him as funny and good and kind and caring. And this was a monster. And I certainly made the wrong decision marrying him. Well, as it turned out, thank goodness.
Isn't that amazing? To be able to reflect back on your experiences without the beliefs that you were wrong, or that you need to pay a price, or that it was something that should never have occurred. I think
I paid the price for what I was thinking and believing about him.
Yeah.
He was not the problem.
And we'll continue to pay the price while we hold those beliefs and not do the inquiry.
And we have to believe them. We have no choice. We believe our thoughts and we question them. There is no other choice. To believe what we're thinking is to live in a hypnotic trance. We're hypnotized. And when we question what we're thinking and we just get still with it and we treat each thought as though it were the beloved or, you know, the most beloved child. Thoughts are like children. They just scream at us until we just, okay, sweetheart, let's come sit down with me. And the others are screaming, I'll get back to you right now. I'm going to sit with this one. And eventually your mind begins to trust you enough. It trusts itself enough to know you can kind of quiet down that I will get back to you.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like that. And then I take this thought, I made the wrong decision. Sweetheart, is it true? And then you image that moment, that husband or that trip, that whatever it was. And as you answer the question and wait, the images will that appear that meet those questions enlighten you just the way we witnessed you doing. You can see it, smell it, taste it. And it is being in that situation. It's like being there now.
Yeah.
And with my first husband, you know, how do I react when I just see an image of him in my head? I mean, when you live with someone so long or not so long, like, you know, a certain sound happens in the room and it reminds you and you don't even know it, but there's an image of that person in your head. Mm-hmm. And if you have addictions, if you still have resentments, then that's what you see in your head.
Do we get addicted to it?
And we don't know what to, well, we don't know what to do with those images.
Yeah.
So we get another image when we don't know what to do with it, and maybe it's alcohol or chocolate or a cigarette we said we'd never smoke again, whatever it is.
Yeah.
We see that image, we smell it, taste it, and we don't even know it's going on. We're so asleep to the world is being created here, not out there. And when we see that image, we smell it, taste it, the alcoholics already had their first drink. I mean, if I ask you right now to bite into a big juicy lemon,
yeah, I can actually get a kinesthetic experience of that. I can taste it. I can feel it.
Not only that, saliva was created.
Mm.
Pure imagination created that physical effect, and that's what you're up against when you're in resentment, an unworked mind. These things like you're never going to eat chocolate again and doctor said no, for example, and you're angry with someone, the chocolate comes to mind, you don't know it.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're asleep.
Yeah.
And then the lemon thing happens, only it's chocolate. If you're an alcoholic, it's a drink. And the way you experience the saliva and all those effects, the alcoholic or the addict, they have that, they've just been hit.
Yeah.
You just got that hit like the lemon. So it's already in your system and the mind created it. That's what we're up against. And I don't know anything to break the spell, but an occasional epiphany. And for me, it wasn't enough. Suffering is optional. Once you know inquiry, suffering's optional. It's like I'm willing to suffer. I look forward to suffering.
I think we've become addicted to that.
I can notice what I'm thinking and believing, and I can question it, and it's that much less suffering in my life. I'm willing to be with my ex-husband. I look forward to being with my ex-husband. If there's a button left to push, I want to know what it is. I want to work through it. My ex-husbands wake me up. The enemy, if you want enlightenment, very quickly find an enemy. You know, friends are the people who agree with us. We make sure we stay asleep. And if you don't agree with me, you can't be my friend.
So go after somebody who really gets underneath your skin and shows you what you need
and
to
we
work
really
on.
Don't have, we really, yeah, and we really don't have to go look for them because it's a perfect setup for enlightenment. The world will give us everything we need when we need it, right on time. We never get more than we can handle.
I was interested to ask you that question, Katie. Do you think that our experiences, all of them, no matter what they are, do you think that they're all kind of set up for us to find ourselves again and to find who we really are, but we miss it because we are asleep?
They absolutely are set up for us, but it's not out there in the world. They're set up here. This is the setup.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you love your thinking, you love the world. If you don't love the world, you don't love your thinking. So as we question what we believe, we love what we think, we love the world. It's not something we're doing on purpose. It's just the end product. And not just the end product, it's a work in progress. You know, the work is meditation, it's a practice. Mm. So I invite everyone, you know, let's do the work 20 minutes a day or not.
Because either way, the awareness is always there. It's just whether we choose to acknowledge it or not. It's still always going to be there, you know.
And it's always there. It's just the ego is what we're thinking and believing override it.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think that there's a way for us to be able to teach this to our kids so that our children don't find themselves in this damaged state?
I absolutely do. Live it.
Live it. And when our kids come home with questions or things that...
It's not something we have to do. We don't have to live it. As we're doing the work, we just become it. Mm, you know, right. Our children say, Mommy, you don't love me. Mommy, I'm angry at you. And there's no reaction. It's like they're asleep. And you don't need to wake them. You can just honor where they are. It is not about you any longer. So you become this amazing listener. Yeah. With open arms and with compassion, as opposed to, what do you mean I don't love you after all I've done for you? You know, these old stories,
yeah.
You know, do fall away like as it should be.
Mm-hmm. I think that if we can be the living example for our children and we can do the work on ourselves, and when our kids get old enough and they come home with, you know, shoulds and shouldn'ts and cans and can'ts and wills and won'ts, teach them the work so that then they land up in a place that's far more free than what our experiences have been earlier.
It's and then some of our children are not interested, and they really can get it through. If I say to my child, you did it wrong. Mm. Or you made the wrong decision. We just worked on that one. You made the wrong decision. Then there's something, you know, that says there's something the matter with them.
Yeah, yeah.
If someone says, Katie, you did it wrong, it's like there's something the matter with me. I did it wrong. If my mother tells me that, then it must be true. So now my identity has become, I am someone that does it wrong. I no longer trust myself.
Right.
But if my child comes to me and says, Mommy, I did it wrong, I can say, oh, honey, are you sure? That's the short version for, is it true? Can you absolutely
know
that?
Yeah.
Honey, are you sure? Tell me. You know what they will? I made a mistake. Honey, really? You know, and if you're awake in your own work,
yeah,
your kids cannot get around you. They cannot be unloving, uncaring, imperfect human beings in your eyes. And we teach them who they are. It's like if my mother says, Katie, I'm just a little girl. She says, Byron, Katie, Byron, Kathleen. She used to come when she was angry, Byron, Kathleen. And I just look around. What did that have to do with me? And then probably one day she said, Byron, Kathleen. I looked around. There was no one there but me. She's looking directly here. All of a sudden,
yeah.
I am that.
Yeah.
So she didn't make me that. She didn't make me Byron, Kathleen. She didn't name me. The moment I believed her, I named me. My mother is innocent.
Right. Wow, that has such depth to that statement, because that flies in the face of every belief that we have, every identification that we have.
Now, there goes identity. Who named me? I did. What do you mean you did? I did. Wow. And also, people might say, is your name Byron Kathleen? I say yes. And, you know, if they say, are you sure? I have to tell them the truth. Don't know. No.
Katie, this has been the most extraordinary conversation, and I know that we're coming to the end of the time for you. Your words have been profound, and I've personally had a couple of aha moments just sitting here, having this chat with you, in that it's all made up. It's all made up. I made it up, and I've been believing it all my life, which means everything, even the fact that this cup is orange in front of me, who's to say that that's what orange looks like? I don't know. And what cold feels like and what sound sounds like, I don't know. If I'm to question.
What's so beautiful in that, Karen, is the world can tell you it's orange, and as love would have it, that's okay.
Yeah.
It's just no longer orange for you. But we don't have to teach it, preach it, that orange is, that is not orange. It is allowing everyone their own belief system, understanding that there's nothing you can do to change it. And to change it, for me to even want to change them, to see that it's not orange, tells me I still think there's something wrong with them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's as though we have separate worlds, and their world it's orange, and your world it's not. Why can't worlds get along?
That's so
the end
true.
Of war. Yeah. And no one could go to war with you. They'd say it's orange, and you can say, I understand, because you do. You used to believe it was orange too.
Yeah.
But the old way is, it's orange. And you might say, no, actually, it's not. I made this big discovery. It's not orange. It's not orange. Well, it's orange in my world. No, it's not. So we've got this conflict going.
Absolutely.
They know more than you do. You know more than they do. War. So, we're all responsible for ending the war in the world. And when we end the war, the end of war in you is the end of war in the world. And we're each responsible for our own world.
Oh, what a beautiful message. What a powerful message.
It's a beautiful world. And, you know, Einstein or someone said that it's a friendly universe. Well, you know, I'll say it. It's a friendly universe, and I invite you to prove me wrong.
Oh, how gorgeous. And I think when we do the work and we do get out of our own way, we can see it rather than seeing a projected view of what's not really there. It's just there through our beliefs about the situation. And I love how you talk about in your book, Loving What Is, which our VIPs in the audience have each received a copy of. And I love how you talk about my business, your business, and universal business. And I think even when it comes to our children, acknowledging that our children are still in their own business, is there a point where that's not the case in terms of their age?
Well, you know, it would be, if you go back to the cup is orange, if my child says it's orange.
It's orange for them.
I might say, the cup is orange. I might say, honey, are you sure? Yes. I said, well, you know, I see it differently. Isn't it funny? We both see it differently.
And done.
The end. Yeah, they have theirs. I have mine. Mm. And if theirs isn't working for them, they may switch.
Very cool. Very, very cool. Well, Byron, Katie, that has brought us to the end of our conversation. This has been exceptional, extraordinary. And if you could see what I see as I look out onto the audience, in my peripheral vision, I've seen heads nodding. I've seen notes being taken. I can hear people, you know, I think that this is a conversation that I think could go on for a long time because of the depth of what you do. And you're touring in Europe in July. Is that right?
I am. I am. I'm touring July 1st to the 16th, and I think I have 10 flights, so I won't give you, you know, all of the stops, but I end in a little place in Germany called Bad Neuenahr, and for the 9-day school for the work. Uh-huh. And so this tour is my heart's desire. And you know what I love, Karen, is the meeting like this. You know, here you are in California, and your audience, and I'm in Australia. I mean, what, how great, you know, for a 71-year-old woman that, you know, not making the flight, because I would, you know. And we all do what we can if we're of right mind, even if we're not, we all do what we can.
That's so true. Well, when you are physically in Australia, or I'm physically in California, would you mind if I had a personal conversation with you and filmed it?
No, that would be just that would be great.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
Yeah. So if you email Erin@thework.com, she'll set it up for us.
Oh, that's fabulous. That would just be absolutely wonderful. And I know that everybody that follows The Couch would just devour every moment and hang off every word. The work that you do is really amazing, Katie, and the energy in this, your ability to sustain yourself is mind-blowing. I think that you're a real example. Katie works for everybody. You know, you're going to find all of this out, because I really want you all to go to thework.com and download all the Judge Your Neighbor worksheets and all the resources. There's videos, there's audios. All of Katie's books are just extraordinary, but I think that the key component is to really understand that here's a woman who is, as Katie says, she's 71, and I mean, how many flights are you on a year? And working with prisons, and working with schools, and speaking for groups, just constantly.
But you know, thanks to these webcasts Oh my goodness, aren't we unlimited? What a beautiful world.
It is. It's absolutely fabulous.
Yeah. It's a beautiful dream. Too bad it's not real. Only fooling. Not too bad. By angels.
Where do you go from there? Everybody, thank you so much for joining us here on Karen's Couch today. Today has been one of the most spectacular days on the couch for me personally, and I sure hope that you've enjoyed it as much as I have. I can tell you right now, hand on heart, the next flight to California, LA, I am on that sucker, and I'm also going to be, well, chances are by the time you guys actually get to see this show, it's going to be around August sometimes. So you may have missed Byron's tour of Byron Katie's tour in Europe, but I won't be. I'm going to make sure that I'm going. So you look her up, look up her books. The first book that I read was called Loving What Is, and it was absolutely transformational for me. So look up Byron Katie. Don't wait another moment. The work applies to everything. If you have a business, get the work happening inside of your business. Start looking at decisions that you shouldn't have made or you should have made. Start looking at actions that you should have made or you shouldn't made. Start looking at clients that you should have or you shouldn't have. Start looking at your family. Start looking at the people that you love or the people that you don't love. Look at every area in your life, because here's one thing we know. We're not just a skin bag of skills. We're not just somebody who's a wife or a mother or a father or an auntie or an uncle. We are so much more than that. And when we do the inquiry, we actually get into, I guess we get into an experience of what the vastness of ourselves really is, and we miss it on a day-to-day basis because we're so distracted. We're so distracted with making money. We're so distracted with looking good. We're so distracted with appearances. We're so distracted on trying to bring it all together and manage our time and not procrastinate and make everything work. It's all a distraction, because what's really real is the essence inside of each one of us, and that's what keeps us all connected. That's what's the same in every single one of us. It's not different. And the real us doesn't have to do all of that. Put yourself through the inquiry and question everything that you do. Question everything that you believe. You may still come up with the same decision that the cup is orange. Awesome. And that's okay as long as you're free. But while ever you're feeling trapped, that's when it's time to start to do the work. All the W's, .thework.com is where you can find Byron Katie. So for those of you guys who have been watching the show, make sure that you subscribe to the YouTube channel and tell everybody that you know to subscribe to the YouTube channel. And for those of you who've been listening to the podcast, please, when you go to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating. Also, you can go to our Facebook page, which is allthews.facebook.com/Karen's Couch. And you can also make comments on the Karen's Couch website. Please tell us what you think of this interview. Tell us your thoughts around Byron Katie. And tell us the experiences that you've had once you've done the work. We're always going to be here and the show is always going to be on air. So you can always come back to it anytime you want to. Thank you so much for joining us here live on Karen's Couch. And we're going to look so forward to seeing you here next week. Same time, same channel. Bye for now. Enjoy the show. Sit back, relax. This is our favorite one.
That's rap.
Yeah, baby.
Seven times.
Seven times. You could not hit that more.
I know.